Judges, look like you're ready. So, Ethan, let's go ahead and talk about double crop soybeans in Kentucky.
Good morning. My name is Ethan Swigert, and I'm a master's student at the University of Kentucky in Lexington. And today I'm going to talk to you about the impact that the preceding crop can have on double crop soybean production in Kentucky. I will walk you through our rationale, goals, and objectives. I'll tell you about the experimental design. I'll talk to you about the materials and the methods, and then I'll talk to you about the results in each section. Overall, our rationale is that regional agronomists as well as regional producers in Kentucky have noticed that when wheat is the preceding crop to double crop soybeans, there's a reduction in yield. And we can back this up a little because we know in the literature that wheat does produce allelopathic compounds that have been shown to reduce growth and development of soybeans. Our goal is really quite simple. We want to increase soybean yields and profitability in Kentucky. Our objectives and how we're going to do this is determine differences of double crop yields in the field. We're going to determine differences in early seedling soybean growth in the greenhouse. And we'll also characterize soybean cultivar susceptibility to winter annual leachate in a laboratory setting. So although I do go to school in Lexington, Kentucky, which is in the central eastern part of the state, my fields are all in western Kentucky where that blue star is. And if you don't know Kentucky very well, the far western side is the Mississippi River right there. Kentucky is also largely a no-till state. So everything that I tell you about in the field today has been conducted in a no-till situation. In our region, the typical rotation is corn, and then winter wheat, and then double crop soybeans. And so that interaction between wheat and soybeans is where I'm going to be focusing today. So for the field, we looked at three different winter annual crops, wheat, barley, and canola, and we also had a fallow plot to serve as a control. In western Kentucky, a canola crushing plant just opened, and so this crop has got a lot of renewed interest in that area of the state. Prior to that, they had to rail it towards Chicago, and it was cost prohibitive. So for the materials and methods for the field, everything was done in a randomized complete block with six replications, and this has been repeated for 2 years. The second year, we added a location, so that's three sites total. For the winter annual crops, we're going to plant those in October, September, and they're going to grow through the winter, vernalize, and then we'll harvest them in late spring, early summer. And then we'll immediately come behind that and plant double crop soybeans in June. Producers in that region will oftentimes do it on the same day they're harvesting wheat. And then those will grow through the season, and we'll harvest those in October. This is a typical layout of one of my fields. That 12-meter alley is quite wide. And the reason we had to do that is because you don't plant canola and wheat and barley all in the same day. You have to wait a little bit. So to accommodate our farm equipment getting in there, we did have to leave a large alley. Okay, so the yields. After 2 years at three locations, nothing was different. And honestly, this isn't too surprising because walking the fields and looking at them, and under visual inspection, it looked like one field. You couldn't tell that there were treatments in there at all. Now, as a new master's student, not seeing any differences is fairly discouraging. So then you have to go back and see, well, what happened? You know, the producer said this, agronomists have said this, but I'm not seeing it here. So I started with weather. The white bars there are precipitation for 2015. The gray bars, precipitation for 2016, and the black bars are the 30-year mean. Precipitation is shown in centimeters. So we've got adequate rain coming up to June. This is when we're about to plant soybeans. So we plant double crop soybeans right here, and then look, we got an amazing amount of precipitation. It was wet. In fact, some of our agronomists had pictures of crawfish on corn tassels. The potential allelopathic compounds, as it turns out, mostly are water-soluble. there's phenolics. And so my guess is that I might have given some of these to Louisiana or my friends down in Mississippi. So this offers one potential explanation that I didn't see any yield reductions, is that if the allelopathy was there, the chance of it leaching out is high. So we then have to go into the greenhouse and try to control the environment a little more. I'll tell you about the greenhouse study, materials and methods. So we wanted to use rhizosphere soil from the field. When we harvested winter annual crops, we came back in with 5-inch long PVC cores, and we hammered them into the soil. And this was a grueling process, but I think well worth it. And then if you very carefully remove that soil core, soil will stay right there, and then that actually becomes the pot that we used in the greenhouse. We planted that with the same variety of soybean that we used in the field and grew it out and took measurements on that. So we had 10 samples per plot. We had the 4 treatments, we had 6 replications, and that adds up to be 240 samples per location. And that truckload there is not actually 240, it's quite less. We measured time to emergence in the greenhouse, and that was denoted as the moment that the cotyledon was free from the soil surface. We also measured whole plants after emergence. And so after 7 days of growing, harvested them, rinsed the roots off, and I measured weight of the roots, weights of the shoots, and I'm going to present some of those findings today. So, percent emerged over the treatments, there were no differences at all. So I want to draw your attention to this right there, is that when a winter annual was present, it did behave a little differently. Barley and wheat ended up stimulating time to emergence. And then the fallow treatment was a little lower. But I want to draw your attention to that's time to emergence in hours. So 125 hours or 114 hours, that's not a very large practical difference. So yes, it did separate out statistically, but in the field, it may not mean very much. Now the biomass. There's a lot of information on this slide, and so I want to draw your attention to these. In year 2015, we saw no differences at all. In 2016, however, we did see that the fallow and canola treatments resulted in greater root biomass as well as greater total biomass. Where wheat and barley were present, the numbers were actually reduced. And this goes along a little more with what the agronomists were noticing, that there is actually something to this. And it could have been just the massive amount of rain that we got in the first year diluted the effects in the field. So to really get at this too, we also wanted to do a laboratory setting. When we harvest our winter annual crops, we couldn't harvest them all in the same day because barley tends to mature a little before wheat. Canola doesn't mature at the same time, and we couldn't convince them to do it anyways. And so we went out to the field and collected stover at the time of each harvest, and I'll walk you through those materials right now. So I took 7 grams of winter annual stover at the time of harvesting that crop and added it to 1 liter of water and then extracted it in an incubator at 25 degrees Celsius under constant agitation. Then soaked 80 mils of that leachate into germination paper, 100 seeds per rep, rolled those up and put them in a growth chamber for 7 days that alternated between 20 and 30 degrees Celsius. And so this was the preliminary study for this part. And this is actually all ongoing right now. So when we harvested barley, I looked at three different concentrations and then a zero control, which was just water. And let me draw your attention to this right here. If leachate was present from the barley in any concentration, germination number was inhibited. The weight and the length, however, was not. For the canola leachate, however, it behaved a little bit differently. When the leachate was present in that 3.5 grams per liter or 7 grams per liter, it actually stimulated the weight of the soybean seedlings. The length of the roots were also stimulated with that. So from there, what we did is focused only on that 7 grams of leachate, and now we looked at all the winter crops, because at this point now I've harvested wheat, so I have that to work with. And there's absolutely no difference in the weight. However, the number germinated was different. The canola at this point, I'm so sorry, but there was an interaction between locations. So this is from the Kreider location. And the canola ended up reducing the number germinated below that of the barley, wheat, and the canola and the control. From the Zanesville location, the wheat actually reduced it, and the canola, barley, and control ended up being above that. So in the field, there on the left, we didn't see any differences in yield. In the greenhouse in the middle, we saw some differences. In the lab, we're seeing more differences, and this study's ongoing. I'm going to add a susceptible variety to that. One possible explanation, in my opinion, is that as the diversity of your ecosystem increases from the lab to the greenhouse to the field, the results of alleliopathy are much more difficult to catch, and they could be diluted. It's really hard to ignore this, though. Part of me wishes I had a wet year and a dry year, but then that would present its own set of difficulties. And so this is also a really good explanation for not seeing the results in the field. And with that, I'd like to thank my committee, Dr. Carrie Knott, John Grove, and Aaron Haramoto, as well as John James, Ethan Snyder, and Catherine McLaughlin, my lab mates. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Questions for Ethan? You mentioned the next, kind of getting a susceptible variety. What do you mean? How are you classifying a susceptible variety?
So the question is, how do I know that I have a susceptible variety to test the leachate against? I spoke with Dr. Todd Pfeiffer, our soybean breeder, and he had done some work years ago, and there's an old Asgrow variety that he said he'd noticed to be highly susceptible. And so I got that seed from the germplasm and grew that out over the summer. They only give you 50 seeds. You can't do anything with that. So I just harvested those, and so that's going to be my susceptible variety.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If someone in the back of the room can open up one of those doors and leave them open, I have a feeling those things are locking on us, so just open it all the way. Thank you.